Welcome down to my 9-foot homemade oak bar. Pour yourself a cold one. You are listening to Bucks in the Basement. My name's Chris, and Craig here is the biggest Pirates fan you'll ever meet. Let's talk Pirates baseball now. Welcome to Bucks in the Basement.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing, but then the next day.
Homemade oak bar, pour yourself a cold one. My name is Chris, his name is Craig, and this is Bucks in the Basement, 30 minutes of Pirates baseball for fans, by fans. And let me tell you the story of a team president of the Seattle Mariners who thought that he could stand in front of a crowd in the modern era and there wouldn't be videotape of something that he said. And he goes on to talk about how they're going to manipulate the service time of their two biggest prospects. Their biggest hitting prospect and their biggest pitching prospect, because, as he said, they wouldn't sign an extension to give up any free agent years, so they won't be here April 1st. They'll be here 2 weeks later. This is exactly what Chris Bryant of the Cubs brought a major arbitration case against the Cubs for. This is the reason why you see teams like the Padres and the White Sox in recent years, and even the Mariners with Evan White, and that was a disaster because I don't think he's ever going to be worth all the money that they gave him. That was a roll of the dice. Okay, but those two teams have done this. They sign these long-term extensions, but they don't talk about the fact that if the guy doesn't sign, he's not going to start with the team. You don't say that out loud, but this guy said it out loud and got caught, and so his service time was manipulated because, as of Monday, he's out of a job.
Here's the thing is, you leave it up to us to say this kind of stuff. You let us talk and say, you know, they could manipulate, you know, Key Brian Hayes' service time. Not that I think they will, but they could. And they could keep him down and keep him for an extra year.
I would. If you're able to do that, I don't remember what the rules were, but wasn't he brought up in the back half because that would allow for his service time to not be counted against him? There was a period of time during the shortened season where if a guy came up in the final few weeks, it did not count towards his service time.
Yeah, and they waited till that point.
And they waited specifically until that point. So look, I know people are always like, oh, that's unfair to the players. What are you worried about? These are the rules, all right? Like, I get it, it's unfair. But you know what? These are the rules. And until the rules are changed, this is how it's going to be. And if I were the general manager of the Pittsburgh Pirates, Brian Hayes, would not be at third base to start the season. You know who's going to be there? Todd Frazier. He's going to be there for the first couple of weeks. It's exactly what he's there for. He's going to be there for a couple of weeks. That's going to be a veteran right-handed bat. That's what he is.
Yeah, and that's where people were like starting to think, if Brian Hayes stays down, we riot, and they came up with, you know, the platoon for Moran, and I'm like, well, yeah, the veteran presence. I'm like, well, I guess so. What else did they mention? Oh, he hit well in PNC Park. And I'm like, yeah, for the Reds back in 2000, right. You know, 14, 15, 16, or whatever it was. So, I mean, and they're saying insurance for injuries, depth.
Oh, it's all bull, Craig, because here's what Todd Frazier is. First of all, seems like a really good guy. Like the kind of guy that every time that I've ever read anything about him, seems like a straight shooter. But he's also a third baseman that one is going to start a third base, I believe, when the season begins, unless Brian Hayes signs some sort of extension, which I'm sure is sitting in his lap right now. And then he's also somebody who can press Kyle Moran at first base. But if he comes out and does what he's done in the last couple of years, he might be released by mid-May. Like, I mean, he's like a guy that's like there for the beginning of the year, doesn't cost a lot of money, and maybe doesn't even finish the year with the team if he doesn't earn a spot and find a role on it within the first couple of months. Because once Hayes gets up and if Moran starts hitting, I don't think you're going to see him that often.
How many times do you see lefty pitching? Like, I know the whole platoon aspect, and I broke it down with the entire National League Central. Outside of the Cubs, who do not have a left-handed starter, every other team only has one left-handed starter. So you might be able to get him in there every once in a while, get him in there in a pinch hit situation. But I'd rather see Phillip Evans doing that. I'd rather see Kevin Kramer doing that. I'd rather see Kevin Newman doing that if he's the bench player. I mean, hell, I'd even rather see Eric Gonzalez doing it at that point in time. If that's what you're going to have this guy around for, to me, it just doesn't.
No, he's been told that he has an opportunity to win a job. He has been told that. There have been teams that are stacked right now who want to sign minor league deals, and players are if you're signing a minor league deal, you're like, I'm not signing with you. I don't even have a chance. Todd Frazier signed with the Pirates because the Pirates offer an opportunity that if all of a sudden he puts together something as to what he used to be, and I'm not talking high batting average. The guy's basically a 250 hitter. He had a couple of years in there in his best years. He's an above average defender who used to be a gold glove caliber defender, but he's gotten older. And he has splits that suggest that he's better against left-handed pitching, but the OPS is only 815 against lefties for his career. He had over 900 OPS in 2019, so he's had years where he's much better against lefties, but it's not world-beating to have a low 800s OPS against lefties. I don't see that as being the main reason he's on the team. He's on the team because he thinks he's going to, first of all, give them the opportunity to hold down Ke'Bryan Hayes, but he also believes that there's a possibility that he is going to win the first base job. And now imagine this. You're a team that's rebuilding. Let me ask you this question. You're a team that's rebuilding, and you're not going to be good for a couple of years. How important is it to you that Ke'Bryan Hayes actually plays this season for the Pittsburgh Pirates? Like, do you want to start the clock? Do you want to start the clock?
I don't.
You have an owner that never spends money, and one day Ke'Bryan is going to get money. Do you want to start the clock? Do you want to sit there and say, you know what, that was a crazy season, and Todd Frazier's looking pretty good. Why don't we get this kid some more AAA seasoning? I mean, I know that's crazy, and they're not going to do it, but like, it crossed their mind at some point this offseason, right? Maybe I'm just nuts, but I always wonder myself, like, look, if you're going to play service time manipulation for like one extra year of control, why wouldn't you play service time manipulation and keep a guy down for an entire year if you have absolutely no chance? Like, I get the major league experience thing, but it has to cross their mind. And it doesn't need to be 2 weeks with Hayes either. You might want to avoid Super 2 arbitration status. You might be waiting until June before he comes up and Todd Frazier's playing third base. Because, you know, the first few guys that come up, a certain percentage of the first few guys that are promoted, you have control over them, but they get an extra year of arbitration. To wit, they could actually make more money because the arbitrator's like, man, that guy's worth $10 million a year. But if you wait and he doesn't get that Super 2 status, now all of a sudden you get another year of control and one less year of arbitration than what he would have gotten if you brought him up 2 weeks after the season starts. These are the games that every rebuilding team plays. And I think Pirates fans have to be aware that it might happen here.
And they say, we'll riot, but no, you won't riot. It'll suck.
Oh, come on.
And
what else could this team do to you that they haven't done to you over the last decade? What else can they do to you that they didn't do to you over the last 3-4 years? What else can they do to you to make you not a fan? They know that those are still fans will still be fans after they do this. You're going to be angry with them. They're not going to watch Twitter for a couple of days. They're just going to be like, I'm going to take Twitter off my phone. And we'll come back later when they're excited about something. You know, I don't know. I don't know what they'll do. I hope that he's standing there and he's playing. I know we all want to see him play. But I don't know what they're going to do. You couldn't get me to bet on what they're going to do right now, because they could take many different avenues with this kid.
And I mean, he came up and he was a world beater for a month. But I mean, for all we know, they could say, you know what, the glove's still there, but something was missing in the bat. You know, it's just, they could just make a comment. And we've seen it happen a million times across Major League Baseball. I mean, it's not like this has never happened before. Like, you brought up one of the most famous instances where Chris Bryant was absolutely 100% ready to be there on opening day and 100% was not there on opening day.
And then yelled about it. His agent, if I want to say his agent was Boris, his agent Scott Boris, I want to say. But he was on the radio screaming about it for 2 weeks until he came up. He was on the radio screaming about it after it was over. He vowed an arbitration filing years in advance. Then they do the arbitration filing. They lose because it's within the rules and the Cubs didn't make the mistake of actually telling everybody they were going to do it. like, you know, what's really going to be funny here is that in about 3-4 years, when the Mariners are trying to tell an arbitrator that Logan Gilbert and Jared Kelenic, this was not service time manipulation because the guy that said that resigned. He didn't speak for the organization. He was drunk that day. Like, that's what they're going to try to say. I mean, that case is coming in a few years for sure.
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, that videotape's like the Zapruder film to their agents. They're keeping it forever. So this happens. We can talk about it, but Charrington can't talk about it. Nobody in the organization can talk about it. But Todd Frazier on a minor league contract leaves the door open for the possibility that this could happen. And look, we're gonna experience a very weird season already in which not everybody's going to be allowed in the ballpark at the beginning of the year. So they're not worried about attendance being hurt by this. Attendance is already going to be hurt by the pandemic. So if they would have drawn, let's say, I don't know, 20,000 a game, and now there's enough people that are rioting that they're only going to draw 17,000, well, they might only be allowed to have 15,000 in to begin with for the first couple of months, so they don't really care if you're mad at them, because they're still going to sell those 15,000, and that's all they can sell. The idea that you're going to hurt their wallet this year, if their wallet's already been told, if they've already been told you have a smaller wallet to work with this year, they may not be concerned with your anger right now because you're going to get over it by the time that they can actually fill all those seats.
Yeah, and here's the other thing I was just thinking about, Chris. It just came up in my head. It's another reason to keep Eric Gonzalez around. Look who started. Eric Gonzalez with the third baseman to start last year. So you got three guys fighting for a shortstop spot. You got Adam Frazier still sitting there at second base. Colin Moran first base. You bring in Todd Frazier and you're guaranteeing him, you know, something, and part of it might include him splitting some games at first base and him splitting some games at third base, but he's splitting the games at first base with Colin Moran and splitting the games at third base with Eric Gonzalez. I mean, people would be absolutely, you know, completely upset. But here's the thing is, we talked about this before Tatis signed his giant contract, that they did not manipulate his service time. However, if they didn't open up the wallet to the ridiculous amount they did for a kid who don't get me wrong, his ceiling is, he's amazing. He's a great ball player. But a kid with, I don't even know what he had, like 143, like major league game, it's just something like absolutely ridiculous that they give him that money. They're losing him like a year earlier. They're right. they're in a Boston Red Sox Mookie Betts, whatever type of situation where his arbitration is so high and they're trying to pay other guys that they can't get him. So it worked out well that they, you know, were going to be able to do that. But everybody knows that nothing's not opening up the pocketbook for even 10 years and $250 million. Like it's not happening for Ke'Bryan Hayes, no matter what he would show. So for me as a fan, do I want him to be up here? Yeah, of course I want him to be up here. But if it means that you can keep him around for an extra year, if you would let him go the whole way to arbitration, let him walk, but I think you would probably trade him before that point in time or keep him till 29 or 30.
Get all of his prime years, deal him when he's hot. You know, Albert Pujols just came out and, you know, his wife put up a story and it's been confirmed this is his last year, right? And I just looked for some reason I wanted to see Pujols' stats. You know, he never had a season in which he was as good as even his worst season with the Cardinals, with the Angels. He never had an offensive season, not one, that was better than his worst season with the Cardinals. Remember the contract that he signed? Yeah. The Cardinals got his prime years, and then somebody else paid for the other stuff based upon something he'd already done for another team. If the Pirates have the idea to be a team that operates similar to the Rays, and I think that everything that they have done indicates that if it's not exactly the Rays, it's in that vein. It's closer to them than the other ways that teams operate. The Rays would keep Ke'Bryan Hayes down. The Rays would have Todd Frazier start. The Rays would understand what the Super 2 rule is. And if you don't understand what it is, I'm going to tell you. Players typically must accrue 3 years of major league service time. 1 year of service time equals 172 days on the 25-man roster or the major league injured list. This is why some people will sit there and say, well, our guy's not ready. Like, this is what they're going to do in Seattle. Our guy's not ready, but he'll be here in mid-April. That gets him underneath that 172 days. Players that rank in the top 22% in terms of service time among those who have amassed between 2 and 3 years in the majors qualify for Super 2. And an example that's given right on the MLB website, Dexter Fowler completed the 2011 season with 2 years and 168 days of major league service time. By the regular rule, he hadn't made it to 3 years, but because he was brought up 2 weeks into it, and he qualified for Super 2 status, he got to go to arbitration 4 times instead of 3. He got to go to arbitration 1 year earlier. They still had control over him, but they were out of control of the money. They didn't have complete control of the money. The other thing that the Rays are famous for is that the Tampa Bay Rays will go to a player every year. They did this to Blake Snell every year. He used to complain about it. They would go to Blake Snell when he was good, and they would say, Blake, you're awesome. You're a Cy Young pitcher. We want to offer you a long-term deal. And he would go, no, I'm going to wait until I get to arbitration and free agency. And they would say, okay, are you aware of the fact that we are allowed to pay you 10% less of what you made the year before under your original deal? And Blake would go, no, you can't. You go, yeah, look it up. It's on MLB.com. They would actually reduce Blake Snell's contract by 10% every year. He's out there getting 20 wins, and he hasn't made it to arbitration yet, and he makes 10% less the next year because they're pinching pennies. This could be how this organization operates because that's how the Rays do things. So if that's what they have to do because of the way that the owner throws nickels around like they're manhole covers, I don't know if I'm sure Ke'Bryan Hayes is coming. I don't know if I believe it 100% until he's on the field.
Yeah, and we've had this discussion before, and I know people online and even, you know, Gary and myself have talked back and forth, and I bring it up and it's like, well, no, they can't do that. They're not going to do that. And I think the same thing in my head, but like I said, everything points to me saying, keep him down. That's what it points to me saying, because if this is what we're going to do and we say that Ben Cherington has a direction, because that's the thing that's like crazy to me is, it's like we want to follow Ben Cherington's direction. Even the people that have faith in Ben Cherington want to follow Ben Cherington's direction until he does something we don't like. And then it's like, well, no, you can't do that to Ke'Bryan Hayes. Ke'Bryan Hayes is our National League Rookie of the Year, like, you know, candidate. We need to have him up here and we need to have him playing. But if we're following like what Ben Cherington's doing and he's saying it's the best thing for the team, he won't say that out loud, but in his words, that'll be like, you know what, Ke'Bryan needs to work on a swing a little
right.
bit.
Right.
There's a little hitch that somebody saw that we'd like to get a better look at. We're going to have him go down.
2020 was a weird year. I mean, yes, he excelled, but no, he wasn't ready yet.
Yeah, so I mean, they could say that type of stuff, but in our head is that, you know what, we're keeping him down to keep him for another year of control, because we don't know exactly when this, you know, quote unquote window is going to open up. And if we can have one of our best players under our control for another year, why wouldn't you want us to do that?
Are you or someone you know looking to learn how to play a musical instrument this year? Then you should be checking out Westgate Music School. Private music lessons for all instruments, including guitar, piano, drums, voice, bass guitar, violin, banjo, ukulele, and more. Are you a vocalist? Are you ready to play a musical instrument and looking to join a group? Westgate Music School offers group classes for rock band, a cappella vocal, and barbershop quartet. Plus, it's all online. That's right. From anywhere in the country, you can learn any instrument you want with Westgate Music School. Gift certificates for Westgate are also available. More information, westgatemusicschool.com.
I mean, we could go into the crux of Major League Baseball, but I'd rather talk about the fact that, Chris, the Pirates did what we said they should do. They went out and signed a veteran starter as well. I mean, we're talking about Todd Frazier.
That was smart.
Yeah.
The veteran starter thing was smart. And you know what? I've heard this thing where people are like, oh, Todd Frazier is maybe he'll find what he used to be. That's all gone. You want to know who you want to see who could reinvent himself and come back and be a fairly good pitcher? Tyler Anderson. You know, you got a left-handed starter that started his career in Colorado and somehow found a way to keep his whip below 1.30 for two out of the 3 years that he was, like, his main 3 years in Colorado. And he had a 1.32 whip as a starter in the middle of those two seasons. Then he fell apart. In 2019, he kind of fell apart. He didn't get used very much, though, because he only got five games.
Well, he had a knee surgery.
See? So there it is. So his only time that the kid fails in Colorado is after a surgery where he only gets five games in and he's not right. And in the 2020 shortened year, yes, he goes out at age 30 and he pitches for the Giants, but that's a weird ballpark that does weird things to pitchers. And it's also a weird season. I think there's a good possibility that this guy could come back out and be a guy that has a whip under 1.30, has a fielding independent pitching down around four, maybe even into the threes, and goes out and starts 30 games for you this year and wins 12 or 13 of them. Like, he could be that for you. And that's a nice little signing that you went and you got. And he's been in the league and he knows how to pitch. So that's a good signing. I like that.
Yeah, that one right there was... That was interesting to me, and I definitely liked that one. Like I said, with the Todd Frazier one, it's not that I don't like it, but this one was something that I thought we needed more of. It was just that after you get rid of Musgrove, after you get rid of, you know, Tyon, even though he hadn't pitched, he was still, like, you know, the veteran type of guy in the clubhouse and everything, and not bringing back Trevor Williams. You needed somebody, and especially where I see this guy is this guy, he's not gonna like knock your socks off. But I feel like he's a guy that you could hand the ball to every 5 days and pretty much know what you're getting from him. You're not going to get, like, I mean, he did throw a complete game last year for San Francisco. So, I mean, the guy has it in him, but you're going to get somebody who's going to take the ball every 5 days, have a pretty good outing, and hopefully go a little bit deeper into the games than, you know, what a lot of the Pirates pitchers have done. Because, I mean, we look at it with Brault. He did have his complete game, but there was times where, you know, he was only going to be going like five innings. With Cool, he had to get built back up. But, I mean, for most part, was only lasting about five innings. Keller got a little bit deeper into games, but was dealing with some injuries. And you don't want to be taxing your bullpen too much. So you need at least one pitcher in there who, you know, for many years, other than last year when he was injured for half the time, was Joe Musgrove, that you knew you were going to get innings out of. You had to go and get one of those guys, because I could have just seen the bullpen just kind of just like crumbling in on itself just from having to, you know, pitch so many innings. So it was really smart to go out and get somebody. And then you have some of your young guys fighting for, you know, the last spot in the rotations, the JT Brubakers, the Will Crows, you know, maybe a Cody Ponce, a Miguel Yajure, if they're not ready to hold him down in AAA just for a little bit longer, you could have him up here. But that, to me, just a really good signing. Like I said, Todd Frazier, solid signing. Could be some writing on the wall for some stuff, and could just be, you know, competition, spring training. We're going to have to see on that one.
Before we get out of here, I want to talk a little fantasy baseball with you. And I want to do it in a way that we can kind of compare the Pirates going into this year with the rest of the league. So we do this fantasy baseball league. Craig's been a part of it for a few years, and he started a rebuild this year, which is amazing. And I think it's just because of the fact he's watching a rebuild, so he decided, like, I'm going to start my own rebuild. And he just traded away all of his good players this week. And he's going to be terrible in this season, but it's a dynasty season, so he's got a bunch of prospects. He's going to be building them up. But I always like looking at our league that we're in together. And I like looking at how players are projected in fantasy baseball. And the reason I do this is because there's no hometown bias. There's only stats. There's only sound science behind trying to figure out, is a guy going to be good or is a guy going to be bad? Because the guys that are on fantasy sites, like the one that we run it on CBS Sports, they look terrible if they're telling you some guy's going to be good and it turns out he sucks. So they write sometimes very brutal reviews on players that everybody else thinks is awesome. They're like, yeah, well, you might think that he's a good player, but when you take a look at this metric and this metric, he got lucky last year. Or you got some prospect and it'll be like, eh, watch out for this because he's going to get killed on it. And they're normally right. So who do you think, first of all, and in our league, the way that our system is set up, if you have a low whip, and you pitch a lot of innings, you're a good pitcher. I mean, everything else in there counts, wins and losses and, you know, walks and strikeouts and things like that. But essentially, that's the key to the league, right, Craig? I mean, like,
yeah.
If you're not putting a lot of guys on base, you're not giving up a lot of runs. If you're not giving up a lot of runs, you're pitching further innings, your stats continue to increase and you score more points for your team. So if you had to guess right now of the Pittsburgh Pirates pitchers, which one is projected to have the best season in our fantasy league? And by the way, the best season is still not good enough to probably be on my team this year, even as like a 12th starter. In fantasy baseball, the Pittsburgh Pirates are not looked upon as a place to find pitching. But who do you think is the best one?
I mean, you would think it would be Keller. So I'm going to say that it's probably not, because that would just be too easy.
It's not Keller.
It'd be like giving me the easy one. Is it? Do they have Tyler Anderson figured in there yet?
No. It's Chad Kuhl.
Okay.
Chad Kuhl's projected to come in with a whip at about 1.30. He's projected to get 10 quality starts this year out of 32 quality starts and go 7-12. And that would be the best pitcher right now, projection-wise, for the Pittsburgh Pirates.
For Chad Kuhl, I'd be pretty happy with that.
Right. That is the best projection for any Pirates pitcher right now by guys who just look at stats and try to figure out, is this guy going to be good? Is this guy going to be bad? So now, as I scroll through, I'm going to ask the next question. Who is the best offensive player projected on the Pittsburgh Pirates this year? Going into this season, according to CBS Sports Fantasy, taking a look at every peripheral, whether or not they think that person is going to play a lot of innings, get on the team, where they're going to bat. I mean, they try to figure out everything to try to figure out which guy is valuable. Who is the most valuable hitter in their mind projected for the Pittsburgh Pirates? And man, I am still scrolling. I got to go to page 2 here because the first 100 results didn't even show a Pirate. But go ahead and guess here while I'm looking.
Brian Reynolds.
Okay, I'm still scrolling here. Still kind of moving along here. You think it's Reynolds? You're wrong over who is the most valuable. I'll give you a second chance. Second chance, it's not Reynolds. Who is it? Most valuable offensive weapon, according to CBS Fantasy Sports, when it comes to Pittsburgh Pirates batters.
Colin Moran.
Colin Moran, by a good measure, over Brian Reynolds. Colin Moran's projected for 551 at-bats this year. He's projected for 28 dongs. He's going to hit the ball out of the ballpark. All right? He's going to hit .254 with a .331 on-base percentage and a .470 slugging percentage, according to their estimates. He's going to strike out 156 times. Remember when that used to be bad? Everybody does that now.
Who cares anymore? It's just like right. Just swing and miss.
Right. He's going to drive in about 76. All right? And that's what Colin Moran is. And once again,
I'd be happy.
He is the best offensive player.
You just scrolled forever, told me how Colin Moran was going to possibly do, and I was happy.
Yeah, I know.
What's wrong with me?
I know. Now, the good news is, as we end the show, the good news is that CBS Sports has yet to pick up on the possibility that Cabrian Hayes isn't going to play this year. They're expecting 494 at-bats from him, a .273 average, and that he's going to go out there and hit 21 home runs. He's going to finish behind Colin Moran in his production, but he's going to play.
Yeah.
So at least they believe he's going to play.
And he still could.
And he still could. Brian Reynolds came in third, by the way. And I think I'm going to have to scroll for a long time before I find number 4, so I'm not even going to try.
Yeah, I wouldn't, Chris. I would just have another drink and we'll...
That's it. That's all you got this year, folks.
Now I see the changes in this town. They change, they say one thing but then the next.